House Command Judiciary Subcommittee on Family Law, Friday, April 12, 1991, 2 p.m., hearing room 357, public hearing and possible work session.
House Bill 3375. We are honored to have the Honorable Representative Shibley honor us with her honorable presence today and tell us about House Bill 3375. Counsel, can you give us your counsel-y overview first?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you'll see in your packet a copy of the staff measure summary, a copy of the bill, and a copy of the underlying ORS statutes, which I thought would be helpful. It is currently basically illegal in Oregon to convey real property which contains in it restrictions on its use based on color, race, religion, national origin, physical or mental handicap, and then there are some other things. The statute was amended in 1989 to broaden it a little bit. Such a provision is void and unenforceable. However, if one receives a piece of property and receives title to property and such a restriction exists, there's no provision to remove it. What House Bill 3375 does is establish specific procedures that would allow for the removal of such discriminatory provisions.
All right, thank you, Council. Representative Shibley, welcome. We're glad to have you here. And we appreciate you bringing House Bill 3375 to us.
Thank you, Your Honorable Chairman and Honorable Members of the Honorable Committee. For the record, I'm Gail Shibley, State House District 12 in Southwest and Southeast Portland. I introduced House Bill 3375 not at the request of any particular constituent, nor because of any personal experience that I've had with these kinds of provisions on real estate legal documents, but rather from individuals who have come to me in the Portland area in particular, who have found, much to their dismay, that a legal document has language in it that they find offensive, troubling, and otherwise unnecessary. Specifically, I'll give you an example. There was one person who was going to help his 93-year-old mother sell her home. She was finally going to have to move to another place, and they hunted up the legal documents and found that they could not sell it supposedly to anyone with African-American origin. And this elderly woman was very concerned and didn't know what she was going to do, and oh my gosh, how is this going to be handled, thinking that somehow this was still a legal and binding restriction. And luckily there happened to be someone there who could take care of it and handle the transaction for her. Another person who moved into a subdivision, an old subdivision in Southwest Portland, took a look at all the covenants and so on and learned that, again, no one of particular color of skin could be there during the after dark unless they were a domestic servant. Similarly, there are covenants in the Portland area that specifically say that Orientals cannot hang laundry in the alleyways and out the front windows and so on and so on. Well, we can laugh about them now, but the fact is that they are, I think, a very sobering part of our recent history here in Oregon and certainly in our neighborhoods in Portland. And I talked to a friend of mine who is the president of a title insurance company in Portland who referred me to his chief counsel and legislative counsel, and he then worked together on the language to get at this. I then got in touch with Genoa Ingram, who is the lobbyist for the Realtors Association, and you'll be getting a letter from her distributed. She took this to her board, and they took a look at the language. And I think it's a friendly bill in terms of taking care of something administratively without making a big deal out of it, so that if the owner, the seller, or the buyer of a piece of real estate want this taken care of, they can do it rather painlessly. Consequently, Genoa's group support the bill, and you'll be getting a copy of that for the record. She would be happy to testify at some subsequent time. Because of the recent scheduling change on this bill, she wasn't able to be here today. So that's the history behind it. I think it's I'm told by those involved having to deal with real estate transactions, a fairly straightforward and uncumbering way to deal with this.
Thank you, Representative Shibley. This would be a property by property authority, correct?
That's correct. So at the option of a buyer, seller, or owner of a piece of property, if he or she wanted to take care of this, they could take the document in or documents in and get that deleted and have an updated, current, non-discriminatory document produced. It could be done at time of transfer of the of title.
And who gets served with the notice? All owners of record?
Yes. Mr. Chair, that's correct.
I'm just trying to think through what the first of all, who would have nerve enough to show up and oppose this, but secondly, who would get the notice? Is there going to be an opponent, and who would it be? I guess is what I'm trying to think through.
Mr. Chair, I can't imagine either. And in talking with talking about this issue with several people in and around the real estate industry, those are the folks that I was guessing might have a problem with having to deal with it bureaucratically. That their response would be, "What's the big deal? It doesn't mean anything. It's not legal anymore. You know, it's kind of like the spitting on the sidewalk thing, or you know, mud from carriages or something. It's an anachronism to a bygone age." But in fact, I think, and I applaud them much to their credit, they understand the particular sensitivity involved with this kind of thing, and they found a way that they think it can be done very simply and efficiently, so why not do it?
Okay. Can I assume that you would have no problem if we asked Mr. Linden from the State Court Administrator's Office to come over and testify simply about the process that's set out here and if there's some way that it works better for the courts? I assume you have no problem with that.
Mr. Chair, I'd welcome that.
Okay.
Yes.
Further questions for Representative Shibley? Thank you very much. It's a very good idea, and we're glad to have it.
Thank you. I appreciate the judiciary looking at this.
All right. There are no other witnesses at this time on this. We will come back to the issue another day. Council, I won't ask for a when because I understand there's some other behind-the-scenes work going on. But I would ask that next time we come back that we ask Mr. Linden to be here, or at least that we ask him to look at the bill and see if he's got any particular interest. We'll close the hearing on House Bill 3375 and do nothing until we get a quorum.
Okay, would you announce that we're not hearing 3526? I don't think anybody's here, but...
Anyone that is here for House Bill 3526 needs to go away because we're not going to do that today. We're going to do that when?
I don't know yet. Yeah. I haven't scheduled it.
The proponents wanted to hold on.
Yes.
Yeah. The proponents of House Bill 3526 have asked that we hold that bill over for a little bit so it will be rescheduled. Representative Mason.
Just out of curiosity, I was wondering, and I don't think it's any problem, but what if somebody left a piece of property to a religious institution and said that they, in their will, they wanted it to remain with one particular? Would that violate this?
Might violate the rule against perpetuities.
But maybe it would.
I understand the question. If somebody left it to...
Somebody left a piece of property to a church with the provision that it remain with that church, what would happen with that, Council? You might look at that question. Two things pop in my mind. One is, I'm not sure that leaving property to a church would be a restriction on property. I'm not sure that would be a violation of ORS 93270.
Either.
And even if it were, I hate to say it, but it raises questions about the rule against perpetuities.
Well, just like if you were to convey some land and said, I want to convey this land to X, but I want it to be used for...
Mr. Chair, Representative Mason, I think the issue is then it's not the question of whose owns it, it's how the property is to be used. So I think that...
Okay, that's good. If that's indeed what it is, then there's right. No problem there.
Right.
The issue is use. It's not...
Yeah.
We do
give them a little leeway on some of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kathy, would you rather we stand at ease or take a brief recess? Mm-hmm. We'll stand at ease until we get a quorum. We can open the work session on House Bill 2994.
He went to check reapportionment.
Since Harry's testifying, Parks went to check reapportionment. Mannix is out in the hallway, I think.
Mannix wants to see if anything's changed reapportionment again. What? Probably reapportionment. 10 minutes the deadline runs on reapportionment. You know that, don't you?
No.
Oh. For who? Everybody.
For the house
meeting? I mean, for to get your input into the plan.
See, I'm reapportionment or I'm redistricting?
Redistricting.
Oh, that's a big deal. That's a huge difference.
Let's take, we'll be in recess until further notice. Session on House Bill 2994, now that we have a quorum. And I believe we have some amendments, Council.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, let me just bring you up to date. House Bill 2994 was introduced at the request of the Coalition Against Domestic Violence. It has numerous provisions in it. The one that the committee grappled with last time had to do with the issue of the police officer at the scene identifying a person who was going to become known as the primary aggressor. After some discussions that I had with the chair, there were some amendments adopted which would delete the notion of having a drafted that would delete the concept of having a primary physical aggressor identified, and came and some language was used from the Washington statute that just identifies who the assailant is and gives some factors that the police officer would use to make that determination. The bill does a number of other things that I think are important to the sponsors and that are not at issue today. I distributed these the Dash 1 amendments, and I believe that the coalition is here to respond, and we were handed their amendments.
The Dash 1 amendments, where are the Dash 1 amendments?
They're in your packets from today.
Okay. Committee, let me give you a little bit of insight into what at least I was thinking in working with counsel on the Dash 1 amendments. It seems to me that the bill that was brought to us created this new person called a primary physical aggressor, this new entity, this new idea, and told the peace officer to arrest the primary physical aggressor. That means that under existing law, you have a charge to the officer to arrest the alleged assailant, and then it says that the officer shall identify and arrest the primary physical aggressor and try to define the primary physical aggressor. What the Dash 1s try to do, and maybe the coalition's proposals as well, I haven't looked at those carefully, is to take the Washington State approach, which says that the peace officer needs to make reasonable efforts to determine who is the assailant. And it sets out a couple of factors that the peace officer can use. The changes being two things. One is it uses the existing phrase of assailant, which is in existing law. And secondly, it gives the peace officer a little bit of discretion by saying he or she is going to make reasonable efforts to determine who the assailant is by considering some of the following factors. I think the benefit to this approach is that it allows us to explain the bill as a definitional bill. We are defining what is current law instead of putting an onerous new burden on the peace officers. We're simply trying to help clarify what their existing job is. So with that, I'm going to ask the folks from the coalition to come up. You have, you folks have seen the Dash 1 amendments?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we have.
And you've got your own proposed amendments here. You can walk through your amendments and compare them, if you would, with the Dash 1 amendments after identifying yourselves for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm David Niebel from Oregon Legal Services, and to my right is Judith Armada from the Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence. Our amendments, dated April 11th, are taken closely from the Dash 1 amendments. They make several changes. One is that they eliminate some language in subparagraph B that is not really necessary because that language is already in subparagraph A about the parties to a domestic dispute.
Right.
And so paragraph B, therefore, directs the peace officer or says that the peace officer is not required to arrest both persons when the peace officer is at the scene of a domestic disturbance. Paragraph C has several changes. One is at the end of C, before the list of A, B, C, and D in large in capitals, we insert among other factors. And we, at in paragraph subparagraph large C, we change the and to an or. The reason that we did that is to make sure that peace officers understand that they don't have to find all four of these categories in every case in order to identify which party is the assailant. We worked these changes out with the peace officers who were here at the hearing on April 1st. They felt that these changes made the section workable and that gave it some guidance, as you said, to peace officers about what existing law really is. Those are that's our intent with those amendments. There's another small amendment on page 9, line 19. It clarifies the circumstances under which a municipal police officer would serve a restraining order, an abuse prevention restraining order, and that is when the municipal peace officer is at the scene of a disturbance, the respondent is on the scene, and a copy of the restraining order is available within a reasonable time. Okay.
All right. Council, one question. You mentioned other issues in the bill. My recollection was, first time through a public hearing on this bill, this is the portion of the bill that the committee stumbled and struggled with, and the rest of the bill the committee was reasonably comfortable with, and I'm inviting input from the committee on this, but Council, is that true?
That's true, with the exception of the issue of municipal police officers serving the warrants, and so the issue that the that David spoke to was also, there was not as much discussion, but the committee wanted that resolved as well.
Okay, let's deal, committee, if we can, first of all, with the issue of defining the phrase assailant or giving the peace officer some guidance on assailant. And to do that, we'll start off, the chair will move the amendments brought to us by the coalition, which I would ask you to mark as dash two. And the chair would move the dash two amendments. Briefly, just to those amendments. The purpose is not to create a new idea or anything like that. It is to take what is existing law that says the police officer is going to arrest the assailant, take the existing law and give the officer, tell the officer, first of all, you're not required to arrest both parties. You may arrest one. And then secondly, set out that you're going to make efforts to determine who is the assailant by looking at some specific factors. Now, we have a letter of support dated April 5th from District Attorney's Office in McMinnville, and I'm going to ask counsel about that in a minute, but I think it's fair to say that we've had substantial input from the law enforcement community on the workability of this, and I'm not sure that we can say the statewide associations fully support it yet, but they're not in the room opposing it either. So I don't know what you make of that. But anyway, I will move those amendments, the dash two amendments marked OCAFDV, April 11th. Is there further discussion of those amendments?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Maddox.
In terms of the language here, I've been chewing on this. I certainly do prefer this version as opposed to dash one. Look at lines four through six, though. We've said when the officer makes an arrest, first of all, that the peace officer is not required to arrest both persons. Fine, no problem. Then we say when a peace officer makes an arrest, he's supposed to determine who is the assailant or potential assailant by considering, among other factors. We don't say there, and some judge someday is going to say this, I'm sure, that the officer has an obligation to arrest the assailant or potential assailant.
It says that earlier. It's in existing law.
In different sections.
In existing law, take a look at the printed bill. It's lines 12 and 13. The officer shall arrest and take into custody the alleged assailant or potential assailant.
Okay.
Okay.
see where we're going with it.
Thank you.
Yes. No, that's it. I mean, yeah, it wouldn't work without that language from existing law. And that's
then,
why that's
then
why
I'm
I think
real
the language
comfortable.
Is,
now I understand
right.
that.
And that's okay. why I think we'll be able to stand up on the House floor or go to the Senate or whatever we need to do and say this is a bill that is attempting to give a peace officer a little guidance and define an existing statutory term. Or not define it, but explain it. Further discussion on the proposed amendment or on the motion. Is there objection to the Dash 2 amendments? Representative Parks.
Are we going to vote on it?
That's what I say. Is there objection to the Dash 2 amendments? All right. The clerk will call the roll on the Dash 2 amendments. Excuse me. Further discussion. Do you want to discuss them?
I'm just really not comfortable with that approach, and I just want to vote.
All right. Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Bellman?
Aye.
Representative Bell?
Aye.
Representative Mannix?
Aye.
Representative Mason?
Aye.
Representative Parks?
No.
Chair Clark?
Chair votes aye. The motion passes. The Dash 2 amendments are adopted. Turning to the issue of... All right, Council, does that also then take care of the service
yes.
issue?
Yes.
What else?
I think we're ready.
The bill is ready.
Mr. Chairman.
I'll be darned. Representative Mannix.
I move the bill is amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Mannix moves House Bill 2994 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion of the bill.
Stop.
The clerk will call the roll on House Bill 2994 as amended.
Representative Bellman?
Aye.
Representative Bell?
Aye.
Representative Mannix?
Aye.
Representative Mason?
Aye.
Representative Parks?
Aye.
Chair Clark?
Chair votes aye. Bill is passed to the full committee with due pass recommendation. I appreciate the working group on this. I think we took maybe a bill that was doomed and somehow we made it live. The committee, I don't know what to say. Well, that bill is passed and we're closed the work session 2994 and the chair will carry that bill. I don't know what to say. It's 10 after 3. I feel like that we probably should ask for a very controversial bill from the Senate or something so we can be here till 5:30.
Have we done 3526?
Be here till 5:30.
I know what, Mr. Chairman.
Be here till 5:30 on a sunny Friday. Representative Bell.
I know what to say.
What?
Goodbye.
Have a nice weekend.
Really, Mr. Chair, there's something really Calvinist, you know, about it being necessary to stay here and suffer when the weather outside is nice. So I think we should break away from that.
I think I hear the golf course calling my name. Saying Representative Kelly.
I hear that too, Representative Kelly.
All right. Have a nice weekend. We're adjourned.